Welcome to Rise to the Top, a podcast from the Greater Houston Partnership that aims to amplify the voices of accomplished female leaders in the Houston region. In each episode, we feature compelling guests who share their personal journey and discuss how their organization is making an impact right here in Houston. I'm your host, Katie Pryor, Chief Development Officer and SVP of Member Engagement for the Greater Houston Partnership. In this episode of Rise to the Top, we're speaking with Amy Cronus, Vice Chair of U.S. Energy and Chemicals and Managing Partner for Deloitte Houston. Amy has more than 30 years of experience serving public and private enterprises, from emerging businesses to Fortune 500 companies. She serves as Deloitte's U.S. Lead Relationship Partner for one of the world's largest integrated oil and gas companies, as well as other Houston enterprises. We're going to speak with Amy about her career journey, passion for the energy industry, and how she's making an impact in the Houston community. We are thrilled to have her with us today. Amy, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on, Katie. It is great to be here.
Well, this is a very fun, full circle conversation for Amy and me today. Some of our newer listeners may not know that Amy helped us kick off this Rise to the Top podcast 2 years ago. Amy was chair of the Greater Houston Partnership Board of Directors at the time. And I don't know about you, Amy, but I can still remember our conversation that led to the launch of this podcast. And now we get you on the other side of the conversation.
Well, I couldn't be more excited to be officially inducted into the Rise to the Top series as an interviewee alongside a really esteemed group of fantastic women. I hold them all in very high regard. And as you said, time really does fly. It was exciting working with you in the partnership to get the Rise to the Top podcast off the ground in 2021, still pandemic days. And it's a wonderful thing that you're continuing to do to amplify the voices of Houston's female leaders. So, you know, if I remember correctly, my fellow board member and friend Gretchen Watkins was our very first guest. And so I'm really looking forward to speaking with you.
She was our very first guest and still a podcast that gets listened to regularly. So the inaugural podcast that was launched, Amy, still has listeners on a regular basis. So this is going to be a lot of fun. All right, Amy, let's kick things off. Give our listeners a glimpse into your background, more about yourself. You know, you're a wife, mother, very proud grandmother, community leader, business leader. That's just naming a few. So tell us in your own words more about you and what your journey has looked like.
Sure. You know, it's really fun to look back and think of myself as a young person growing up on a horse farm in a small town in central Ohio. And now that I'm in the fourth largest city in America, sitting here in my office that looks out over town and talking to you, it's just amazing and so rewarding to look back at all the wonderful chapters I've gotten to have. As I said, I grew up not too far from Columbus, where I went to school at The Ohio State University. I went there not really knowing what I wanted to do, but knowing I wanted to see the world. And so started in liberal arts and international studies, ended up also getting a major in accounting, international business, you know, running varsity track along the way. It kept me busy. I was one of eight children. I get asked a lot, what number? Number seven. My younger brother and I were dually called the babies. That was our titles for a long time. Family's always been so important to me. And, you know, learning the value of hard work early on and the importance of faith, family, and friends was so beneficial to defining my world and eventually my career outlook and helping me define what was possible. I will say when I was preparing to graduate from Ohio State, Texas and the energy industry in particular were portrayed as a great frontier of exciting opportunity for anyone willing to work hard. And what's awesome is that it remains so today. I was very blessed that my now husband came to Texas with me. And throughout all of the moves and navigating our careers, we were able to create really amazing memories and experiences with our three children. And now we're having the best time getting to know our children as adults, as they start their own families. As you mentioned, I am a proud grandmother, and it was so fun recently and just, you know, kind of this completion of circle of life, bringing my grandson to one of our Deloitte events recently. He got to see Yaya's office and meet my team, and it'll be rewarding to see what he continues to do on the horizons of his life.
I bet he was the most popular person at the office that day.
He is full of energy.
Yeah, good. I love what you said about define what's possible. And that just relates so much to Houston. I mean, Houston's all about opportunity and defining what's possible. So I think that's It's just a very appropriate phrase for talking about this region. So we know you have more than 30 years experience in various industries, oil and gas, chemicals, technology, manufacturing. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you navigated your career trajectory that led you to where you are at Deloitte today.
I was recruited to Texas in the midst of a boom. And soon after graduation, I interned in the boom. And as soon as I started, it was a huge bust. It was a major energy downturn. And I started out as an auditor, and I worked on a variety of audits for oil field service companies and other, you know, downstream manufacturers, all of whom really suffered. And it was during that energy downturn and working with companies in turmoil that proved to be some of the most highly educational, informative moments of my life. And it taught me two very key things. First, you know, building relationships is just key throughout life. And two, being first a servant leader and then a catalyst leader have been really important to me. Those early career experiences introduced me to some of my greatest friends and mentors. We didn't call them mentors back then, but folks who really took a chance on me, a Yankee girl from Ohio, and left an indelible mark on my life. And they also taught me how to thrive, you know, in the middle of adversity. And that really helps develop character. And it also taught me how to build teams. And I knew from those early experiences that I wanted to work with people in a variety of experiences and situations. And so professional services allowed me to do that. And those teams helped me develop relationships where we could excel when the industry was thriving and when it wasn't, and helped me get to work with many great people who I came to trust and rely upon. So, and that's what ultimately led me to Deloitte, where relationships and our core commitment to bringing value to our people, our clients, and our communities are really central to everything we do, and, you know, match perfectly with my values and beliefs. And it's how we do business and structure our teams and develop our professionals. And so that's why I've been so proud and fulfilled being part of this firm. So as I mentioned, the second element I mentioned was forming my leadership style. And I learned very early on that, especially since I wasn't part of the club, you know, in the oil patch, to start with, I really focused on having my head down and working really hard and being a servant leader, rolling up my sleeves and doing whatever needed to be done. But then also I came to realize that's not enough, that you have to think big. You always have to be looking to the future and the bigger picture and exploring possibilities and potential and being that person of saying, what have we missed? What are we not considering? What possibilities could make this better? Where can we grow in terms of capabilities? So that's really led me to, I think, where I am today, where I think of myself, my obligation to be a catalyst leader, to inspire my teams, to seek out new possibilities and solutions, to deliver the very best to our clients. So now coming into my last chapters, my goal is to really give our people the support and room to manage our clients' needs so they continue. And, you know, so what's so exciting, you and I have spoken a lot about the energy transition and our desire for Houston to be the clean energy capital of the world and to continue to grow. And I really think we're poised to tackle tomorrow's challenges. So, you know, being a student of the market and business and keeping a clear vision and purpose in mind, and then effective communicating to people is really key to building trust.
Yeah. And, you know, I always find that in these conversations, there are those things that, you know, you really want to write down that somebody said. And the way you put, you know, you need to roll up your sleeves, but also think big, identify possibilities. That's the only way something like energy transition is really going to happen in the way that it can and should, is by people who will roll up sleeves and really think differently about the way things can be done. When you reflect on your career journey, what are some of those pivotal moments when maybe you took a risk or you did seize an opportunity to do something a little bit different?
I would reference the chapter of when my former firm, Arthur Anderson, had a tragic end and went out of business, and I needed to take care of my team and my clients. Or I would choose when both my husband and I had opportunities at different times, which were in New York, and that we chose Houston. So I'll let you pick.
Ooh, I like both of these. And it might be new for people on that are listening. I'm sure many of them are new, but, you know, maybe the latter, because, you know, that's a moment where you think you could go outside of Houston. So why Houston?
So I started my career in Houston and made partner. I was given this amazing opportunity to go to Austin to reopen the office and go from serving large companies to lots of tech startups and lots of venture capital backed entities that were in high growth mode. And I got a lot of advice from the senior partners I worked for, like, that's very risky, Amy. You just broke into being one of the first women to serve crown jewel large clients. Why would you want to go to a very risky situation? You'll be dealing with very unsophisticated and higher risk, you know, situations, and it may be really hard to be successful there. And it might not be easy for you to come back. And I was like, first of all, I wouldn't go do something if I thought I was going to come back a failure. But I did hear this, you know, real concern for my ultimate career about doing that. And I was so blessed that my husband, now a retired CFO, he was at a place in his career where he had just helped sell a company. And he said, that would be a great place to, you know, raise our three young children and for you to be off the road and more focused. Let's do it. If I hadn't been the support of him at that moment, being willing to pick up more of a core support for the logistics of our, you know, our children getting to school and everything, I wouldn't have had that freedom to really pour myself into this new baby of opening an office and starting a practice. And clearly we were growing very fast. So it was an amazing experience and growth. And then later on, talking about New York, he had the chance of going to a company in New York. And after I'd been in Austin and had an amazing experience growing, the firm said, you know, it's time for you to do other things, optimize your potential, Amy. And some of the roles I was offered, well, they're all offered outside of Austin. But the most, probably the most senior and most impactful one would have been in New York. And you know, a lot of people tried to tell me, like, this is a bigger deal. You'll have more upside potential, whatever. Had a lot of folks saying you should go to New York. And I was also offered the opportunity to come back to Houston to serve a very large entity. And I interviewed for that job. Didn't think I would get it because I was very honest. Look, I've done a lot of other things, downstream, midstream, earlier in my career. I've been over in technology now. I'm not a petroleum engineer. So, you know, if you're looking for an E&P expert, that's not me. And that client was like, we know we have lots of that. We want someone who knows how to build global teams, combat silos, bring us other viewpoints. And that excited me. That entity was on kind of a transformational journey. And frankly, it was wonderful for our family to come back to Houston.
Yeah, well, we lucked out. We benefited from getting you and your family back in Houston. And even listening to that story is so relatable for people. You know, if you take the elements of trying to figure out the dynamics between priorities at work, priorities at home, what's your support system, which I do want to come back to in just a little bit. That's such an important topic for, especially for this podcast, but also those making those big decisions. And sometimes you just have to go with your gut and stay true to who you are, be able to put that out there and then just move forward. I love that story because it was a pivotal moment for you and something that I think is really just so relatable for so many people that are listening to this. Yep. And you did also touch on a really important fact of STEM. So the people you were speaking with, I'm not a petroleum engineer. You know, if that's what you're looking for, that's not me, but you don't have to be a engineer or a mathematician to be in STEM. And STEM is something that over the last couple of years, you know, we continue to get more women in STEM, of course, but there's still a great need for not only women, but just young people getting engaged and interested in STEM. You have a lot of personal insight in this. And so maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the shift that you've seen of women getting more engaged with STEM, but then also how can we inspire more young people in general to get into the field?
Yeah, when I started my career, there weren't nearly as many women in the energy industry or frankly in STEM fields. And usually the only female in the room on most of my first projects and such. And especially when I was a young new mother, there was not a lot of understanding around things that we just take for granted today. Like there were no mother's rooms or extended time off. And, you know, it was something you sort of had to, I wouldn't say hide, but you definitely were not going to make a big deal out of the fact that you had other responsibilities besides just your career. I do think that it gets better and better. And so much has changed then. We do have women have so much more opportunity and it continues to grow. You know, things like paid parental leave, flexible work options, competitive benefits in organizations that understand the necessity of creating a culture that allows everyone to thrive. That's positive. Of course, we still have work to go. We really do need more skills, more, technically enabled young students going into STEM fields of all backgrounds. And I do feel so proud and ecstatic to look around Deloitte and Houston and other businesses where so many women are entering the workforce boasting a degree in a STEM discipline. And Houston is the most diverse city in the US, but we also need to make sure those diverse citizens are getting upskilled career training. So there's still much work to be done to inspire that next generation of women. And I think we need to continue to have conversations to educate young women on the opportunities that are waiting for them in STEM and the plethora of scholarships and grants and more programs that we can help folks avail themselves of. So that's one of the reasons I value the partnership. Vehicles like Rise to the Top provide an opportunity to amplify the stories of women who navigated a career in a once male-dominated industry. You know, and specifically, as I think back around all the speakers that you've had, you know, one of the other great interviews I got to do was with Dr. Renu Kator of U of A. And, you know, the stories of her, Gretchen, every other person I can think of, Katie, we all did diverse things. We all, you know, had brought some sort of broadening experiences that we didn't expect by saying yes to opportunities. Like I already said, I never envisioned all the different chapters I would have. And all those women, they accepted positions around the world. They accepted doing things they didn't have any experience doing. And so I really want to give people the message, especially young women, don't let fear of the unknown hold you back.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And, you know, the other thing that even the speakers that you just named that we've had on the podcast, but really all of the females that we've had on this podcast have in common is that you've used your experience to help pave the path for people in the future. And I know that something that's really important to you, Amy, is on paying it forward. And so making sure that you're supporting your people. You know, how do you see that? And how do you help pave those paths for other women or just other young professionals in general?
Sure. Great question, because I think about it a lot, because I've become far more transparent and authentic and not hiding that it was a real struggle when I had three young children, that I probably was not the funnest person to be around because I had trained myself to operate with not many hours of sleep.
Oh, yes.
and I would do it differently now, in that even though I was blessed to have lots of help, I felt this need to kind of hide how hard it was, right? So you do have to work hard, but you have to be smart and you have to get as much help as possible. And at that same time, remain open to challenging roles and new opportunities. I was blessed that I didn't think, oh, I have three young children. What am I doing going and running a new office?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Which is easy to say to yourself. It's easy to talk yourself into that.
Right. So, you know, before looking, be agile, be a team player too. I know people find this hard to believe, but I am originally a shy, introverted person. And especially younger in my career, I had to really put myself out there to say, it's not just all about the work. You need to network. You need to show up. And you have to underpin those traits by being an empathetic and engaged listener. People know if you are not authentic or sincere in caring about them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that listening being so key for even making progress and getting connections and building those relationships that are so important to all of our roles.
Absolutely right. We all know people in organizations who the first thing you think of, they are all about them. Mm-hmm. They may have great smiles and engagement, but you just know. But then you also know the people who really sincerely care and are lifting the boat for everybody.
Yeah.
And those are the people you want to emulate, hang out with, be part of their network.
Yeah. I could not agree more of just you surround yourself with the people who have the energy and authenticity that helps just create more spark for yourself too.
People look to team leaders to provide forward-looking perspectives and keep them motivated by working toward a shared goal. And that's harder in this, you know, in this virtual world that still exists. So again, I'm a big proponent of when possible, get your teams together live.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. Completely agree with that. The hybrid work environment has made things more challenging and it's provided opportunities for individuals to step up in a big leadership way. I do want to shift to another important topic that's on the minds of so many professionals who are growing careers while growing families, and you did touch on this earlier, so I want to come back to it. You know, everyone has different philosophies on how they manage and nurture the things that are most important to them. For me, it's never using the word balance because there's no balance. It's what's the priority. And so, you know, as you think about your own personal philosophy when it comes to prioritizing those really important things in your life, what is that personal philosophy? And what advice do you have for others who are working to define their own?
I'm guilty of not being perfect or always walking the talk in this, but I'm trying really hard. And I say that because
there's that authenticity, Amy.
Well, health and family are essential. And, you know, that old saying, you have to take care of yourself first, and, you know, with the mask in order to save everybody else. And so that it's tantamount to taking care of my family and my teams. As I already mentioned, I've been a lifelong runner and advocate for wellness. And again, I haven't always done this, but when I prioritize my health and fitness, I feel like I can do anything. I still run and I still do other kinds of exercise. And although I'm much, much slower, I still get so much mental health benefits from exercise. It really does make me feel strong, decisive, energized. And again, this is where I'm being authentic. It's the first thing to go, especially when I'm traveling on the road, that I end up getting my steps in the airports instead of being as disciplined as I should around getting exercise. So, but I encourage everyone to find what their well-being is. I also try and do yoga and indoor cycling, but it's hard to fit it in, but it's the smartest thing to do. And then obviously family, coming from a big family, my husband's Greek, I'm of Italian heritage, you know, right there. We have big, noisy family together. And it's always been integral to who I am and how I approach my relationships with my own children and the teams I lead. So I just think it's critical that you really can't do your best at work unless you're taking care of yourself and your family too.
Yeah, such an important point. You're exactly right. It for so many people, women in particular, it's the first thing to go. I mean, the number of times that I wish I had just started off the morning with a quick 20-minute exercise of some sort, because like you, I know the difference that it makes in my entire day, the difference in sleep, even if it's 3 hours, 5 hours, it's a better 3 or 5 hours in between the busyness of life. And so taking care of yourself, I think that's so, so important. Another thing that I know is very important to you is giving back to the community. So you dedicate a lot of time giving back to the community. You're a big advocate for literacy. There are so many organizations and opportunities in a city like Houston and in a lot of our communities. So how do you approach decision-making when it comes to which causes and roles do you commit your time to when you do have to think about all the different priorities in life?
I can't help but laugh thinking of my team's reaction every time I come back from an event or a meeting, excited.
And you're inspired.
Yeah, exciting to tell them, like, we got to support that. But when looking at an organization, I look for where I or my firm can provide value. So whether it's through our teams at Deloitte giving back through pro bono efforts, or my own personal experiences, I often pause and think it may not need to be me in order to be impactful or bring value to this effort. I cannot be more fortunate to be one of the largest partnership in the world of incredibly intelligent and talented individuals who all have a heart for giving back to our community. And so I believe that first you need to define your values and then try to only devote your time and efforts with endeavors that align to those values. For example, at Deloitte, we put a real priority on workforce and workforce development, which then goes back into education, and which is very aligned with my belief. I wouldn't be where I am today without the bookworm I was as a child. And so, as you mentioned, literacy is near and dear to my heart. One thing I really want to point out, because this is for women, is that apart from the partnership and local literacy and education programs, I've always been a proponent for more affordable and higher quality childcare. Mm-hmm. You know, as a working mother and now a mother to a working mother, it's easy to find the time and energy to get behind something you're so passionate about. I would really like to see us all improve how we're sending our preschool children into the world, because if they don't get early exposure to good literacy, nutrition, dental, language, all that, their odds of success is much less.
It is much less. That early childhood education has always been an important priority to the partnership. And I think a lot of us find that personal alignment with that because there is a difference. You know, data studies show that without that quality, affordable early childhood education and access to it, the outcomes are very different. So absolutely a worthy cause. And great that you can take the opportunity to go out in the community, get inspired by all of these incredible causes, and then come back to the team and open up opportunities for others to get involved too. So that's another way of paying back and paying forward. We are going to get into one of our favorite things. I know you love this too, the lightning round, but before we go there, let me just ask you for, you know, some final thoughts on, you know, as you reflect back on your personal life, your career, you know, what's the legacy that you're hoping to leave behind, whether it's in the industry or the Houston community, for all of your contributions? You're so incredibly involved. What does that look like for you?
That's a hard one because, as you just mentioned, there are so many avenues where I'm hoping that I've made at least a small impact in terms of at least bringing my firm along and other community leaders to be passionate. So I hope my legacy will be that passion is good and that next generations of leaders, I hope, will have that same passion to step up and continue to foster the good things of, you know, Houston as a true global frontier, both in the energy transition and medical research. We've got it all, space, you name it. The more perspectives and backgrounds we have contributing to all these endeavors and to shared problems, the better the outcomes will be. So I think, you know, that legacy of get involved, not just about what you personally can bring, but what you can help bring from everyone else too. So, and also I would say possibilities. You know, one of our latest efforts at Deloitte is centered on really trying to educate the world with better facts around the energy transition. And we call it eliminating possibilities. And I love it. It inspires me to always dream big, even if it's bigger than what anyone else in the room is willing to vocalize. And lastly, excitement, the excitement for our industry and our city, the excitement for what's to come as Houston continues to be the light, to light the way forward as we discover new and better alternatives.
Well, all very well said. And I think something that is worthy of hanging your hat on. I bet anybody listening that knows you, Amy, or works on your team is probably nodding along saying, yep, she's doing that. So that is all very inspiring. Let's do it. Let's move to the lightning round. This one is so much fun. We get to know your Houston, Amy. So places, things that you enjoy most, which is so hard to narrow down in a city like Houston, in a region like Greater Houston. But these are quick answers, so just fire away. All right, favorite restaurant.
You know this is really hard, but Brennan's is a local favorite, both for family celebrations and to taking folks to. You just can't go wrong with turtle soup, redfish pontchartrain, and the tough decision between souffles or bananas.
Can't go wrong. That's exactly right. Favorite place to unwind?
My children tease me. My happiest moments are when we're gathered around the table and I have a glass of wine in my hand and I'm laughing at them. So, or with them, or they're laughing at me. So,
hey, that sounds great. That is a good way to unwind. Place you love to take out of town guests?
Especially for my Deloitte colleagues coming from other places. I love seeing them tour our places in the Innovation Corridor, Greentown Labs and the I, and always give the best tours and paint such a great picture that surprises out-of-towners around our city's tech ecosystem and foreshadowing how much we are on the forefront of growing. Obviously, for friends and family, I love showing them our growing green spaces, the newly completed tunnels under the Kinder Land Bridge, Memorial Park, Buffalo Bayou. And always a sentimental favorite is taking folks past the Wortham Dandelion Fountain, where my husband, John, proposed 37 years ago.
Oh, I love that. Well, yes, then you have to hit up that spot. Okay, so what's your favorite power lunch hotspot?
Well, we're right in central downtown, so we get to host a lot of clients coming to visit our greenhouse, our innovation center powered by Energy and Industrials. And I love particularly catering in either Tree Beards or El Tiempo.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Okay. What makes Houston a great place to live?
It's that we're truly a nexus of so many industries, cultures, ideas. You know, I've said it several times already, I always refer to Houston as an exciting frontier, and it never ceases to be exciting. It's constantly changing, and I love having a front row seat. Our future of America, as you know from the Kinder studies, is being played out right here from our cultural perspective and demographics. And as I already said, the future of the energy industry and the medical research center is being played out in front of us. So there's so much more to that, but most importantly, the people.
Mm-hmm, the people.
We have the most welcoming, resilient folks ever.
Couldn't agree more. On a similar note, what does Houston need more of?
I alluded to it earlier around young people with upskilled talents. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We, you know, in addition to, of course, we'd love to have more headquarters and, you know, more positive facts out in the world around how important Houston and our industries are to the future. But young talent with upskilled training is just critical. Of course, while not necessarily in the more of category, I'm excited to see what happens with the hydrogen hubs and the CCUS and all the kind of the new innovation and the innovation gaps that are yet to be filled that are going to happen. It's going to happen in Houston.
Yes, and it'll be an exciting day when that comes more and more to Houston. So when you think about Houston's overall trajectory as a city, what word comes to mind?
I already said frontier, so I'm going to go with trailblazer or harbinger. Houston embodies the people that live here, and we really lean in, roll up our sleeves, and get to work to solve problems.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I think that's the perfect note to end on. Amy, thank you so much for being with us today, sharing so much of your personal, professional journey. I am certain that people listening out there could really relate to it and take something away from this conversation. So I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Katie. It was a lot of fun. And what you and the partnership are doing is just outstanding. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Amy. This has been great. And that's it for this episode of Rise to the Top. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. You can do so via your favorite podcasting platforms or by visiting the podcast page at houston.org. There you'll find links to recent news updates and learn more about how you can get involved in the great work of the partnership to make a difference in the Houston region. Thanks again for listening to Rise to the Top.